Direct from Fort Meade, Maryland, this is DinFos Live.
Hello and welcome to DinFos Live. I'm Major David J. Murphy, a DinFos instructor and your host for today's program. On this month's episode, we'll be talking all about the practical application of public affairs with someone who's been around the career field for a really long time. I'm glad to welcome our guest to today's show, Strategic Advisor to Communications and Outreach for the Chief of Staff of the Army, U.S. Army Colonel David Butler. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
Please
Thanks
have a seat. Thank you.
Appreciate
Glad
that.
To have you here. We know you're a very busy person. We really appreciate you taking time out to be on our program today. But before we get into our discussion, I just want to remind everyone that if they have any questions for our guest, to please put them in the chat below, and we might just read them on the air.
Bring them on.
All right. Yeah. I like that attitude, sir. Okay. Well, let's get on with the questions then. First, sir, can you tell us a little about yourself, your career in the Army, and your career in public affairs?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, an Army is a little bit different. We become public affairs officers after having a job at first. So I was an infantryman growing up.
Oh, wow.
Platoon leader, company commander, staff officer, and in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. And about the time I was getting promoted to major, the Army told me I was going to be a public affairs officer.
Wow.
Yeah, it was at first not like on the track, but I went back to a memory I had in Afghanistan where we had Greg Palcott from Fox News embedded with us. And I remember he was broadcasting right outside our tent, you know, to the whole world. And I was thinking, you know, amongst other things that we had going on, I was like, here's this guy who's having a profound impact on the world. You know, he's communicating to however many million people. And then when the Army told me I was going to be a PAO, I said, you know, I'd like to be a part of that.
So that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
You mentioned the Army told you you were going to be a PAO. Had they not told you, or they kind of left you on devices, what would you have done in the Army?
I would have gone on to be an infantry, you know, the track is battalion commander after that, then brigade commander. So my peers right now are just finishing up with brigade command. So
okay.
In charge of about 4,000 or so men or women. And I do often compare that with public affairs officers because I think that we really have a unique ability to make a big, big difference. And so my peers are doing great work with those 4,000 or so folks, and it's really important, and it's very important to those people. But, you know, I'm lucky enough to be able to whisper in the chairman of the Joint Chiefs' ear before he goes on the world stage to talk about what our nation is doing, or the chief of staff of the Army alongside him as we continue to transform the Army and improve the Army. So two different tracks, and I'll tell you, I'm glad I took this one.
That's great. Pretty cool. It's great to hear. That's a very important role you play, sir. And, you know, you've seen a lot of the public affairs career field change over time. So talk to me about, you know, how you've seen the career field change and where you see it going in perhaps the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I think, obviously, we're much more digital now. And I think we're probably going to end up talking about social media, right, because we always do. I think that folks today, public affairs officers and audiences in general, are a lot more savvy to what's going on in the world. It's a lot harder to just focus on, you know, your small piece of the pie, because we have, you know, the information environment is so wide and so open. So people have a lot more awareness. And I think that, you know, that lends to the practical application of public affairs. It's important, you know, when we're on DinFos Live or we end up talking about something that's seemingly like a tactical or very personal thing. Sometimes these conversations can have strategic impact. Hopefully not this one, but, yeah. You know.
Well, sir, put yourself in the shoes of that kind of battalion commander, their PAO, right? You know, you're trying to support a commander who's talking to, like you said, 4,000 troops. What are some kind of best skills, best practices that PA pros can leverage to help support that commander trying to achieve their effects?
Yeah, so first is, and we often get this wrong, we as in military leaders, but also public affairs officers, first is everything's got to be tied to a purpose, right? So you shouldn't ever communicate just to communicate. You don't tweet just to send information out, or you don't give a speech or talk to your troops without having a goal in mind. And starting with the end in mind, starting with a purpose, or we say sometimes, you know, write the headline first. That really crystallizes what you're going to say and how you're going to say it and really who you're going to say it to. So that would be the main coaching I would give, you know, start with a purpose and then go after that purpose. But in terms of internal communication, there's so many different, you know, venues and ways to communicate to your force internally. A lot of people default to the need to do social media and Facebook groups and stuff. And I think interpersonal communication is probably the better way.
Absolutely, yeah. The Air Force actually does a survey amongst their troops, amongst the entire Air Force, called the Where Airmen and Guardians Get Their Information. And it's really surprising to see just how our troops want to be communicated toward. Actually, that kind of leads into a question that we received before the show. So as you may know, we put this notification out to the wider audience to say, hey, let us know your questions. And we actually got a question via email from Mike D, who asks that the Defense Business Board released a report on communicating in large organizations. Can you give us your experience with internal communications? What's worked for you? And also, have you read the report? So, you know, what's your take on it, if you have?
That's not Mike D from the Beastie Boys, right? That's
just, No.
Okay. Well, we don't know. Maybe. It could be.
I know, but yeah. It would be neat if it was, wouldn't it?
It would be very cool. I don't know if he's still alive. I assume he is. Anyway, I haven't read the report. It sounds like a report I'd want to read, actually.
It's actually a pretty neat document. I recommend it.
Cool. So internal communications is really fun, I think. It comes down to the basic blocking and tackling. To put out, and I've been very fortunate to have been part of some really great organizations with good teams and good staffs. And if you think about the impact you can have of putting out a weekly one-page newsletter with a very, you know, very simple story about somebody in your organization that did something well or, you know, that's been a part of the organization for a long time, that the impact that you can have with just that simple thing goes a really, really long way, and I remember those things fondly. Also, put in your mass communication specialist to use internally, the photos, the videos, with an internal focus, not always just thinking about what you're going to put out to the public. That can go a long way, and I'm not talking about cake cutting ceremonies. I'm talking about candid depictions of what your organization's mission is.
Yeah, absolutely. That honesty and integrity, right, coming from the unscripted moments, right?
That's right. Yep.
You know, we actually have a little bit of a debate going on and a kind of, you know, question about this, and I want to get your take on it, sir. So obviously, when we teach public affairs at the schoolhouse, there's three basic strategies that we teach, right? There's command information, community relations, and media engagement, right? And mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, command information, internal information, that's kind of talking to your troops, right? And, you know, communicating internally. But the spouses of service members, if you were communicating with them and you want to align them with a strategy, would that be a command information strategy because they're the, you know, they're related to the spouse? Or would that be community engagement because you're talking to civilians primarily? How would you relate that?
That's funny. I think that's internal communications. Okay. And it's a difficult population to reach, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
And reach in an authentic way, and some of the stuff that we talked about. To think that your troop is going to go home and pass the information to their spouse is less than likely. And the spouses who really need it, the spouses who are disconnected from the organization, it's even less likely that their trooper is going to pass that information. So you've got to find unique and novel ways to do it. But I think the best ways are at the lower levels, you know, at what, you know, in the Army we would say company level or below, where you have a little bit more personal connection. You know, does a brigade commander or a wing commander need to be talking to spouses? Not on the regular, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've seen our career field kind of evolve and advance over time within the Department of Defense, and specifically within operations in the information environment. We've seen public affairs, you know, really kind of being treated as this information force that's vital toward the commander achieving their effects. So from your perspective, sir, how do we best support other information forces, and how do we get other information forces to support us? Kind of like, how have you seen success there?
Well, you've got to, when you say other information forces, you mean like partner partner militaries?
CivMil, MISO, Civil Affairs, those type of organizations.
Right. Well, first you've got to find them. Yeah, yeah, that's actually a good and difficult example. First, you've got to find them and have relationships with them. You know, I come from the special operations community, and I learned a lot about building out networks. And in that case, it was, you know, for targeting terrorists. But in this case, you have to develop a network of communicators and a network of people who are going to communicate on your behalf or need to be communicated to. And once you do that and you're willing to get away from the email and like have face-to-face conversations or on the phone conversations, you find that most of the time your network can really, really you know, double and triple your ability to communicate. So I would say that some personal experiences in Afghanistan, if you want me to go on forever, when we got there, you know, it was the Americans weren't communicating that much with the Afghan population. We saw some difficulty with the Afghans doing it, and we saw some need for them to hear an American voice, or at least a NATO voice. And so we just started calling reporters, Afghan reporters, and we started having them in for, you know, a cup of tea. We would drive out and all around Kabul and all around Afghanistan, actually, to go meet with these folks. And then we'd have little WhatsApp groups. And anytime we needed to communicate something, then we'd sling it to a variety of folks in kind of a personal way. And that just took off. It was just like there, we had so many people communicating. I say on our behalf, it sounds like influence. It is influence, but it's just also information, getting it out there. Yeah. And so the network's really important.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. Can you talk to me about what was your biggest communication win that you've had in your career, where you put in implementation and you had great effects out of it?
Yeah, great effects. That's a good way to think about it, right? Because we're purpose-driven. Well, I'll just go back to one. We had this newsletter. I'll talk about this newsletter forever, right? So we were at the Special Warfare Center and School. It's where they train Special Forces men and women and MISO and Civil Affairs at Fort Liberty. And we were trying to do some external communication, but really didn't have that much of a venue to do it. So we started a newsletter, just me and a couple of my team. And I just...
An email newsletter, right? Or was it a physical newsletter?
Yeah, this, so funny enough, we did some physical distribution of it. Where do you think we put it?
I imagine in the places where the troops are, where they're going.
We put it in the latrines, friend.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that makes sense.
And, you know, this is a schoolhouse. So we were talking to instructors and cadre and stuff. So a lot of them were more senior. So we put the physical newsletter out in the latrines and around posts. And this is just, you know, printing a couple hundred pages. And then we did also blast it out via email. And I just remember people that had worked there for a while, there were people coming to us with tears in their eyes.
Wow.
Yeah, they would come and they'd be hugging us. And I read the story about Joe. I never knew that about him. He's such a great member of the team. And it was like this internal pride that I'll never forget how powerful that was. Mm-hmm. It wasn't talking on the national stage, which, you know, I've done for quite a few years. It was just a really personal impact. And you said effects. I think that affected the organization quite a bit. People in it, they would look forward each week to our newsletter. And, it didn't take that long. It was a little bit of a, you know, a weight that we had around our neck, because every week you're producing a story. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that we had great impact there. I really enjoyed that.
If anything, it's a forcing function, right? And it allows you to sort of be like, well, I need to cover that thing, so give me the access so I can cover it, so I can write the story and make your newsletter.
It was a force function. It actually was, yeah.
On the other end of the spectrum, right, you know, we obviously do many different things or try to communicate, and not all of those communication effects go as planned or are as successful as we hoped. Have there been any experiences like that for you? And if there were, what did you learn from those experiences?
Yeah, so you'll remember that I worked for General Milley for 3 years when he was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs.
Absolutely.
And you know, we went through some wild times. That was
indeed
a difficult time in our nation. And General Milley was often, you know, the one uniformed person in several rooms with all of our political leadership. And I missed the ball on this one thing. So he's testifying in front of Congress, and one of the members of Congress kind of went after him and the Secretary of Defense for like, you know, something about being woke or a class they were teaching at West Point. And General Milley kind of launched off, you know, pretty aggressively and talked about, you know, where DEI came from. And it was a pretty big deal. It was actually such a big deal. I've never before been trending on Twitter, not just your algorithm showing you like this is the stuff you want to see. We were trending number three on all of the world's Twitter. This little clip. It was a really big deal. My phone was obviously blowing up. I mean, people everywhere had some type of response. And what he said, probably at face value, most people would generally agree with. And it was important to a lot of populations in our force to hear that, you know, General Milley's standing up for all different race, colors, and creeds in our force. But I thought that was a great thing at the time. Yeah. I was like, here we go, you know, our chairman speaking up for what's right. Well, it was just a couple weeks later that the narrative really started to shift. And we went through years after that of bad times, and the people were using that to bash your military, and social media, you know, became a massive cesspool of personal attacks and attacks against the military, all based on just a couple minutes he said in Congress.
Wow.
And so as a public affairs officer, I was kind of into the moment. I should have been able to see around the corner a little bit. And if I did, I think I could have tried to maybe steer the attack dogs a little bit to maybe something different. But once it took off, you know, it was out of our hands.
Right. Absolutely. We had a life of its own, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You want another story?
Of course. Quick. Please.
So Afghanistan. General Razik, Kandahar police chief, got shot and killed right next to General Milley, the four-star in Afghanistan. I was right there with him, right? And obviously, if the four-star, the American four-star is in a firefight, that's big news.
Yeah.
So I holstered my weapon, and I called Barbara Starr, first person. Barbara Starr, CNN Pentagon correspondent. And I was like, Barb, I want you to know, General Miller's alive, the mission continues, but we were in a little bit of a scrap, right? Because I was thinking, I need to focus on kind of the world media right now and make sure that people don't think Afghanistan's gone completely awry. Mm-hmm. You know, this was in 2017 or 18. And I did that, Barb ran with it, you know, then I got to communicate with the Pentagon press. It wasn't 2 days later that a New York Times reporter called me and said, hey, you know that in Afghanistan, most people think Miller, the American, killed Razik, the Afghan? And of course, I was like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. And there's the public affairs mantra is like, you don't engage crazy because you're giving it more, you know, gravitas, or you're giving
fueling
it
the fire.
Giving it more, you're fueling the fire, giving it more spotlight. So at first I was like, we're not going to address any of these crazy rumors. Well, it took off, and a large majority of the Afghan population believed that's what happened.
Wow.
It's conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But that was another time when we got caught looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. It was crazy.
Well, those are some really amazing stories. Do you have any perhaps unusual or kind of strange stories that you've kind of, or experiences that you've had in your career as a public affairs professional? And I would say, did they inform or shape your career at all?
I mean, I was, luckily, I got brought up in special operations, so I was able to do some amazing things that a lot of public affairs officers weren't able to do. So
right.
I would say certainly traveling all around the world. I was talking to some of the crew here. You know, I've got to sail around on a ship and do national level operations from a very tactical perspective. So in those positions, well, we were lucky enough to, you know, be able to edit the president's speech.
Wow.
You know, like they would send it to us and say, you guys did this operation. What do you think we should say about it? That's a really cool and interesting thing. So
yeah.
I would just say that never turn your back on opportunities like that. Just dive in. You're good enough,
yeah.
Right? You're just as good as anybody else doing this kind of thing. So
just take them head on, right?
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of the opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. Good words of advice for sure. You know, sir, obviously you've been in the military for quite a while. So have I.
Not that long.
I'm looking at retirement here in the foreseeable future. I'm curious, you know, from your perspective, sir, when you take off the uniform, do you plan to continue to pursue kind of the strategic communication in the civilian world, or are you going to do something else like woodworking? Who knows?
it'd be fun just to like work on cars.
Yeah.
Anyway, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, I think I'm going to continue to work.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be in communication. I mean, I do love what we do.
Oh, yeah. It's fun.
It's important. It's, you know, it's human beings, right? We communicate. It's kind of organic to who we are. And so I love doing it, and I think I would look forward to a civilian career doing it. My wife gives me some smack sometimes and says, well, if you get out of the Army, you're going to be a spokesperson for a dog food company.
Oh, my gosh.
And so I just say, not that dog food isn't important, but part of being passionate about communications is doing it for like a real, you know, foundational purpose.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I think in, communicating on behalf of the Army is a very important function, and it's definitely something very significant. So whatever you end up doing after, when hopefully the Army gets to keep you for many, many more years before that happens, I hope it's as significant as what you're doing currently, or at least gets close to it. You know, obviously, you've learned quite a bit, right? We talked a little bit about, you know, private sector, right? Because that's eventually where we may end up. And, you know, we have audience members who I think are from the private sector. So my question to you is, considering how much public affairs and public relations learns from one another, do you think there are any lessons we can learn from the private sector about how they use strategic communication?
Yeah, sure. You know, one thing that they do is they only seem to communicate when they're trying to achieve something. We very often, and I think it's part of to what we teach probably here, is we want to do media, or, you know, we want to do social media. And as we talked about it before a little bit, about the, making sure you're tied to a purpose each time.
Yeah.
So when we get invites to go speak somewhere, the chief of staff of the Army gets invites to speak somewhere, or he gets an invite to do an interview, I'm thinking, what purpose are we trying to achieve?
Yeah.
Maybe the purpose is just being transparent. I don't necessarily drive my calendar towards just being transparent all
right.
the time. I'm usually tied to some type of purpose. When you look at the civilian world, at least in my experience, they don't go out of their way just to communicate. They have ends and means tied to everything that they do,
right.
And you know, that's purpose-driven communication,
yeah,
which
absolutely.
I'm a champion of.
No, it's an important thing to keep in mind for sure. You know, obviously, the future holds many different things, right? And one of those things, and can't escape it, is the advents of artificial intelligence, right? It's accelerating at a extremely fast rate.
Yeah.
I was watching, you know, this program, and it's showing how it's being integrated at the operating system level on computers and whatnot. And so I'm curious from your perspective, and, you know, not in any sort of official DoD capacity, but just generally speaking, what do you think AI means for us as communicators going forward?
Yeah, I just start this with, I've had the benefit of communicating with some of the industry leaders on this. You know, I get to hang out with the chief, and he meets a lot of cool people.
Absolutely.
One of the things that stayed with me and stayed with him is that they, it was, anyway, I won't name the person, won't name the company, but they said, you know, they invested, I think it was like $200 million
wow.
for 2 years with a small number of people. And that got us to basically where ChatGPT is.
Okay.
And now they're investing like six times that with
yeah.
six times the amount of people. So if you think of how much AI has mm-hmm. taken off, I love ChatGPT, by the way. I
oh,
use
yeah.
it all the time. That's not an endorsement.
No.
If you think about how much it's changed just in the past 2 years or even less, right?
Yeah.
That's going to be exponential
yeah.
about, you know, how much it's going to take off. And so we've got to be ready. I forgot what you asked me, actually. I'll just say that the introduction of deep fakes, what a lot of public affairs people do sounds like AI, ChatGPT.
Yeah.
A lot of press releases I read could have been written by a computer. This is one way I use it. If I have to give a talk or a speech or, you know, farewell or promotion or something, I write that in ChatGPT and say, give me a speech to promote so-and-so.
Yeah.
And they give a speech. And then I'm taken back because it's likely, you know, close to what I would have said.
Sure.
Then you got to crumple that up. It's on a phone, so you don't do that. But
yeah.
And say, I'm going to say something genuine instead, like
right.
something that ChatGPT can't even come up with, right? So you can use it also to
yeah.
challenge yourself, not just to cheat.
No, oh, of course, until you say, be more genuine. Like, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's right.
No, I think it's definitely an interesting tool, and we're definitely going to see it be something we have to be mindful of, not only for us as communicators, but I think on the other end, right, our adversaries are going to be using AI tools more and more if they're not already to try
absolutely.
To affect the information
environment. And they are.
Right?
Yeah, they absolutely
so
are.
We definitely need to be ready for that in terms of not only knowing what they're using, but how to counteract it. So I wouldn't be the PAIO I am if I did not ask you if there was anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye to you.
Oh, thanks. That went fast.
It did, didn't it?
I think we should all take pause in what we do for a living. I think that being a public affairs officer is a very, very special thing. And it's really important for what you do for your organization, the people in it, and the world, our taxpayers, moms and dads. They need to hear from us, and they need to hear it in an accurate and well-said way. I'd say 2 months at DINFOS or 10 weeks at DINFOS is not going to prepare you to do that. So you have to study on your own. You have to keep up with the industry. You have to like read and know about what's going on around you. And if you do that, this career field is going to be just massively rewarding. And you're going to get to places and go places that you never imagined doing. So I think I would leave our audience with that. I also just want to congratulate you getting out of the Air Force soon. You're retiring.
It's coming up, yeah.
You've been doing this for a long time, which is a service.
Yeah, 3 years.
To our community, 3 years, probably 30 episodes or so.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, congrats, and thanks. Thanks for what you do for our community, really.
Well, it's been an honor to have this platform and ability to communicate with our community and really let them know what it is we're doing here at the schoolhouse and to try to accelerate the conversation on some of these topics, which I think are very important, not only for the foundational folks who are going through, like the folks going through our qualification course, but really everyone in the career field, as well as those people who might be interested in coming into the career field, or those on the outside in the tertiary and the private sector who might be looking in and Absolutely. Trying to learn and glean maybe best practices that the military are doing that they can apply to their own organizations. So again, it's really been an honor to have this opportunity, and I am, you know, really excited and hopeful for what this show will be like in the future post me, whenever that might happen.
Well done.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Well, that's our show for this month. Pretty fast. It flew by, in my opinion. Could have probably spent another 30 minutes talking about all the kind of different topics that
would
are going on
to.
In the world today. But I do, again, want to thank you so much for taking time out to be
Glad
here
to
today,
be here.
Sir. I know you're very busy. So
thank you.
Everything you've been able to give us and our audience, I think, has been really awesome. So thank you for sharing your knowledge. And
Thanks
expertise.
For having me. It's great. Thanks a lot.
Glad to hear that, sir. Thank you, sir. I'd also like to thank all of you for tuning in to our program. I really appreciate your participation and attendance to our show. By the way, if you'd like to hear more from Colonel Butler, as well as many other PA professionals, I highly recommend that you tune in to the DINFOS Way podcast. It's our sister podcast over in DINFOS. Colonel Butler actually gave quite a great interview about information warfare on episode 15 of that program, so go check it out. And speaking of podcasts, if you prefer to listen to our show rather than watch it, you can, because it is a podcast. So just go on your podcatcher of choice and search for DINFOS Live, and it'll pop up. So go ahead and like, comment, subscribe, and all that great stuff. By the way, join us next month on November 20th at 2 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be talking to Mrs. Lulu Maservi about crisis communications in the video game industry. So that should be interesting. All right. Well, for everyone at the Defense Information School and the Defense Media Activity, I'm Major David J. Murphy, and we'll see you all next month. Bye, everybody.